I just read a new abstract on a study talking about the importance of melatonin with COVID. So I think that that's helpful. You know, I would shoot for 3 to 5 milligrams at night. And that's a pretty easy one, generally pretty well tolerated. And it appears that is looking helpful, especially in from a prevention standpoint. And certainly, you know, not only does number one melatonin help your sleep, but it will also, it's an antioxidant as well. So that can be helpful.
With the documents that you attached, do you want us to bring them in for an office visit to discuss stuff with like that, or is this what you
These are not,
on our own?
yeah, I will, no, I we will go through these. So you don't necessarily have to print them off. If
Okay.
you think of it and you do print it off, you know, absolutely. But like as a team, like I want to like help with more things like this so that we can like really track and know where we are. Because I think it'll be a good tool for both of us. And
Okay.
so if I don't remember, or if you haven't had an appointment in a while or whatever, like, hey, let's, you know, can we get one of these things filled out? Absolutely. Let's do it.
Okay.
I think that'll be super helpful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions about anything? I didn't anticipate it would take like 10 minutes. Is there a vegetarian food plan? Yes. You know, I have actually food plans are super awesome with the Institute for Functional Medicine because I've got vegetarian ones, I've got vegan food plans, anti-inflammatory diet, like all of those things. So, you know, and the nice thing is, you know, oftentimes the vegetarian doesn't switch to a different food plan, but like if we are doing a bit more of a elimination diet or a little bit of a mitochondrial diet, we can evolve things as we need to, or a more keto type plan. So that is often helpful. So yeah, if it's helpful to have a food plan, please shoot me a message. I can actually share them through the portal even. And certainly, always, I'm happy to talk with anybody about any of those things. I'm not keeping up with my waiting room, apparently. Something's happening. Oh, yeah, Lori, thanks for asking this. I will, you know, there is a group that does walk and hike. And if any of you know how, I don't know outside of Facebook how people are getting that information. And I don't know if anybody wants to, if anybody's got any ideas or could chime in.
Which group are you talking about?
Well, I know there's a hiking group, and so I don't know if it's a
Oh.
meetup, like in the summertime, well, and I presume it's all year round, but in the summertime, there is a meetup group, and I don't know if they have a website or.
Yeah. There's Valley Wanderers. Their hikes tend to be ambitious.
Okay. where do you find the links to the ambitious hikes? Is it just Facebook or is it also?
That's an email list.
Oh, it's an email list.
Yeah.
Do you have a link for that you could shoot me that I could share with people?
Let me ask them if it's okay before I do that. The gals in charge. But if they say fine, I will go ahead and do
Or
it.
if I can always get a name for who's interested. Actually, that would be a way I could do that too, is I could collect a
First, yeah. Yeah, I'll go ahead and ask them. And
okay.
I actually just found out and joined an online exercise group, and it's going to start November 28th. And it's functional sports training for The name of the group in the winter is Ski Babes.
Oh, yeah, it's a gal out of Fairbanks.
Valdez? I think she's in Valdez.
All right, well, I know people who've done Ski Babes for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I don't know if they let boys join Ski Babes, though.
I don't either.
That might be a girl thing.
That indeed, yeah. But Ski Babes is, I mean, I just signed up and I've done, what I like about it is I did some sort of at-home testing to see where I'm at in terms of my physical fitness. And then, so as I start the program, when the second, my six-week session starts on November 30th, I'll know where I'm at and how to do things. And then today I watched a video and I'm doing an assessment on how my muscles are supporting my knees properly. So I really appreciate her her care about, you right. know.
Very cool.
And I can send you a link to that, Jill.
That would be awesome. Yeah, that would be really awesome. Good. Any other questions that anybody has? Not much. We have been, if any of you listen to the radio, Big Cabbage Radio, we've been talking kind of about COVID and all kinds of things, supplements over weeks. And we were also just talking about some of the other symptoms somebody might develop just beyond, you know, a cough or a runny nose or kind of typical upper respiratory symptoms, like some pretty prominent fatigue sometimes, or sometimes people will just have nausea and diarrhea as potential symptoms. So that's, possible. So I think people have really reached out to me if there's been a question or concern, and I would just ask people to continue to reach out to me. Just reach out, either call the office or through the portal. And so far, I think we've really been able to walk everybody through this. So far, so good for our team so far.
Is there anything besides melatonin supplements that you think may help the COVID, fight against the COVID? Or is it just exercise and sunshine?
That always helps.
Yeah.
I would, you know, vitamin D. I would say vitamin D. And for most people, you probably should be in the range around 5,000 I use a day. I mean, unless I've told you you are high, that's a really good rule of thumb. Zinc, I like 25 to 30 milligrams a day. And then vitamin C, I would probably say 2,000 milligrams a day.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a variety of other things we can do if you start coming down with something. There's things that we can consider adding, and I want us all to take what's adequate, but I'm also not a huge fan of taking handfuls of supplements, because I've been there and I've been advised to do that before, and it's just like, it's not that fun, and I sometimes will question the value. But if somebody's getting sick, I want to hear about it, because we can try that. There's a question about fluvoxamine to prevent COVID deterioration complication. I have not heard about that. That will be something I can look at. Thank you. I mean, certainly there's lots of, everybody kind of heard the hydroxychloroquine. Well, that seems to be falling out of favor. They're really investigating an antiparasitic called ivermectin. That has been used in a number of trials. There's a pretty interesting website that people can look at. It's called C, like as in COVID, C19study.com. It's pretty interesting. It's, you know, if you will, is it's not like watching the stock market, but it's live tracking of all the different studies that are happening. And that's really cool to, you know, just to see what's out there. And they're really, as we go and as we learn, like this shows benefit, this one doesn't, you know, positive or negative study or indeterminate study, and they're all categorized. So it's really interesting. And you can actually get, you can basically actually click on the abstracts of these studies. So it's a pretty neat thing, like if you want to look at it. But, you know, and we know certainly as we want to be very careful with steroids in the beginning, because you want to mount an immune response. But if you that keeps going and you're having trouble breathing, that kind of stuff, then we can actually add in steroids, because we want a good immune response. We don't want too much of an immune response. So a real overzealous immune response. So there's lots of things we can do. So actually, as long as people stay in touch with me, we can, I mean, it feels like we've been able to navigate this thus far. You know, my goal would be obviously to be able to keep you all away from the ER if we can.
Can I say something about C19? Please. They're actually doing a study, you know, across counties in the US for tracking. And right now, to have data on Mat-Su Borough, they need 430 more people to sign up. And you just complete this little chart each day. And I can actually share the link to the app in the chat.
Yeah, share it. Because then I'll figure out how to save the chat, and I can always share that. And I can always even do this kind of more privately. What more questions? Stress reduction, yes, very important. So COVID, you know, it's interesting. Dr. Zink spoke to us today through the Alaska Municipal League conference, which is basically a conference for elected officials in the state. And she really talked about, you know, our numbers are going up, but we are also testing more. And we know that a large percentage of the population is going to be either very mildly affected in terms of symptoms initially or asymptomatic. So we do know that. And, you know, I mean, I think the idea behind testing, like if, and I heard a rumor, so for what that's worth, that they may start after Christmas testing like at the high school, like daily. I'm not quite sure how they figure they're gonna like roll that one out real quickly or efficiently. But that's not my problem to worry about, thankfully. But there is a question if they are going to maybe do some more asymptomatic testing. And I guess the idea then would be is, well, if you test positive, they want you to isolate for 10 days. You know, the only issue is I think that the challenge is that when we're doing PCR testing, which is testing for fragments, you know, it could be somebody that actually had, maybe you were like affected a week ago, and you're fine now, but now you got tested. So it's really hard to know, but you're going to have to isolate for 10 days. And they say 72 hours after no symptoms or 10 days after a positive test. So if you never have any symptoms, I think it's just challenging to know right now. And we're learning as we go, which is super awesome. And one other comment I want to make on that is the CDC has recommended that if you have tested positive and you have had COVID, you should not get another test for 90 days because you could test positive again, even though it's a past infection. Huh. So that's coming into play for some people traveling, because if you're going to go to Hawaii, you have to show up with a negative test, which is interesting. unless you could have, I don't know, if you could have proof of a positive test 3 weeks ago, I'm not, it sounds like they want another test. So that's a challenge. So there was another question about, the C19study.com. Maybe that's the link that's being asked about. How about a question about metabolism effect on the virus? I need some clarity on that question.
I just noticed that a lot of the children who would generally have a higher metabolism don't display symptoms, or when they do, it's just for a couple of days and then they're all gone.
Interesting.
I'm just thinking that could be a play in there, and that would be why a lot of cases under 10 aren't showing up. I mean, there are cases obviously, but it's a lot lower number than general. It was a discussion amongst my family this weekend.
Well, I think that's really interesting, but we do see in children, especially younger, like they tend more not to be spreaders, and they tend to be asymptomatic. So then the question is if they're, you know, like in the countries where elementary school children have been back in school for a period of time, these kiddos, like people aren't getting sick, and if they're not, we're not seeing that it's coming home to the families. So it's really interesting. I mean, I think the biggest thing that we have to think about with all of this is we are, I don't know, what are we, 9 months? Almost 9 months, well, I guess 11 months from January, but really it impacted us mid, you know, March. And, you know, we're learning. I mean, and thankfully we're learning. And I think the challenge sometimes for people is not understanding, well, why don't you know? And meanwhile, in medicine, we're kind of like, well, it's always been like this, but you know, that we've never had the spotlight so large and so deep on any particular problem. So it just makes it interesting. I suspect it raises a lot of questions, which is good, because I think people learn, but I think a lot of people, on knowing how it, some of the things, the inconsistency and the unknowns that we deal with every day, are like baffled by the fact that there's so much unknown and so much inconsistency. And I think that it makes people question the process, but meanwhile, it's kind of been the process of science all along. So any other questions, comments? Any suggestions about what you might want to hear about in another 2 weeks? Topics? If people want to put some topics in chat, I could do that. Somebody wants to shout, you could do that.
Hey, Jill, I will say that today I had a mild migraine and was really tired. And partly because of you, I went out and took a walk at lunchtime.
Good. How'd it go?
It went great. And the dog appreciated it too. And then I laid back down on the couch.
Good for you for going outside.
Yeah. It's like I could hear Jill in my mind. It's like no matter what, go. So I have a feeling part of what you're doing with these talks and your emails and our weekly conversations on the radio is reminding us to do the things that we need to do to stay well. It's sort of creating kind of a support group for that. At least for me, that's true.
No, that's a goal I want. I'm trying to figure out the best way for people to make sure they have access. And most people, are in the portal. I still have some people who are not, and you know, like, and I want to educate, like, Docere is to teach, and that's what I really like to do. Groups of outdoor enthusiasts, that's a good one. Where and when, I could do a little bit of information on that. Flu shots, you know, let me put, you know what, maybe we should talk about, like, would it be of interest just to talk about immunizations? Like across the ages?
That would be a good thing across the ages.
Why don't I do that next time? And we can talk a little bit about pluses, minuses. But I think, you know, I will just say, and I think most of you know this, like, I am all about educating about vaccines. I am fully vaccinated. So I'm not anti-vaccine, but I'm also, I'm somewhere in the middle there.
Did you get a flu shot even?
Nope.
You got all the other ones. Because of you, I got a pneumonia shot this year.
I would, you know, like that, if you're in the right age group, I would get a pneumonia shot. Mm-hmm.
65, yeah.
Yeah, I think, yeah, for anybody that's 65 or older, a pneumonia shot, and getting that pneumonia, the PPSV 23 is really good. Like, I think... Yeah, and some of the other things, I think we got to weigh risks and benefits, look at the potential efficacy. Shingles is an awesome question. Boy, everybody's going to want to know the shingles vaccine. Should I hold you in suspense? So I will tell, here's what I'm going to say today. I'm not going to promise you I won't change my tune in 2 weeks. How's that? Or on whatever the first Tuesday in December is. When I had done some research on shingles vaccine previously, it was not super efficacious. It was just beyond the flu shot, somewhere in that 40 to 60% efficacy. So that is... you know, that's a challenge when you look at some of those things, because if you're in that 40% or 50% or 60%, it's the same conversation we'd have about any vaccine. If you're in that responder category and you actually build antibodies, that's great. I would really look at somebody's personal history to vaccines as well. Like, that's really important to go like, wow, have you ever had a problem with a vaccine in the past? That's definitely a question that I would think about, allergies. But, you know, there are things in vaccines that we wouldn't probably ingest, you know, given a choice. So, and those are needed to be adjuvants, things that basically will promote an immune response. I think that there is... there's just a lot of conversation around it, and I've got some good resources that people can, you know, look at and refer to. See, you know, I think there's a question about, what about simply eating and eating clean and exercising and managing your stress and your sleep and all of those things and supplementing, is that reasonable? I would say, yes, it is. It is for a lot of people. There are certain bacterial things that we know we can become more susceptible as we age. And that's kind of like talking about the pneumonia vaccine. But some of the viral things, it's hard to say. So shingles, we know, is basically it's dormant chicken pox or varicella. So it rests in a ganglion somewhere. The ganglions are along our spine. More often than not, somebody will get, if they're going to get shingles, they'll get like some streak across their chest or something. But certainly I've had people get shingles in one of their facial cranial nerves. And so they get it by their eye, or which can be a problem, or in your ear can be a problem. The question is, you know, there's some people can go through life and never, you know, had chicken pox or maybe got a chicken pox vaccine and never get shingles. You know, other people will get shingles. More often than not, people get it when they've been under stress, they've been sick. We see it more commonly if people are immune compromised. So if they're on medications or somebody's under cancer treatment, something like that, that would increase your risk. But, you know, so we see, but I've even seen kids who've gotten chickenpox vaccines, you know, when they're younger elementary age kids, but I've seen people as young as probably 17, 18 years old end up with shingles then. So, you know, and when we were taught about chickenpox vaccine, that kind of came out while I was in my residency training. And we really talked about it then as a vaccine of convenience, because at that point, people are like, well, which parents have, the opportunity to be home for 2 weeks with your kid if they're sick with chicken pox. So a lot of times people, that's why we were kind of, or at least that was the thinking when we were promoting, if you will, that vaccine. And certainly I would say, you know, if you've made it through your teenage years or into your teenage years even, which is not uncommon now, if you haven't, you know, been vaccinated, I'd vaccinate because, you know, I guess there's people of all ages around me here. Like in my generation or age group, like there were like chickenpox parties and you don't find really a lot of chickenpox parties at this point. And so kind of the biggest thing is, you know, it wouldn't matter which age you had chickenpox at, you know, is, should you get a shingles vaccine? It's an option to get a shingles vaccine. You know, I can't say it 100% yes or no. You know, we've all got to decide. There's a chance that you're a non-responder. There's a chance because it's an inactivated vaccine that you could also get a rash after you get it. Kids get that with chickenpox sometimes, that vaccine.
Hey, Jill, when I was talking to the pharmacist at Fred Meyer's about getting my flu shot and my DPT and my shingles, she thought the shingles shot was the most stressful, that, you know, it isn't unusual for people to not feel well for several days after getting the shingles shot. And you know, in terms of combining vaccines, which I decided not to do. She thought I could do the DPT and the pneumonia together, but she would not do any other shot with a vaccine, with the shingles vaccine. She's like, no, because you're probably not going to feel well.
Good, bad, or otherwise, the pharmacists are doing an awful lot of the vaccines these days. So that's good to know. You know, and I think with some of those things, you might think if you're going to get a shingles vaccine, something like that, if you have the opportunity, you know what, like maybe get it like in the spring or, you know, summer or early fall, like when you feel like you have more vitality, you know, like to me, that would be the time to do something to have that you could mount a good immune response and not, hopefully not get your butt kicked at the same time. So, but I don't know if there's ever been a study on like seasonality of getting a variety of different things. So that would actually be an interesting, it's an interesting thought. Yes, you can get shingles more than one time. I would say with most of our viral things that can happen, generally a second time would be more mild. Any other questions? This has been a very fun discussion. COVID vaccine. Yes, as you know, as we get closer to having a COVID vaccine, we will have more discussions. Absolutely. Yeah, and I think, you know what, like, let's, I actually really appreciate you guys giving me a thought, because sometimes I can talk about all kinds of things. I want to talk about things that you guys want to hear about. Because it's, but I think if we talk about immunizations, I think that will be really good. And I can put together an email with different resources that can be used. And I think Fireside still carries a couple different books that I've suggested. I'll have to check with them.
Hey, Jill, this is Sharon. Sorry about the no face and new iPad thing. So just to be clear, with the worksheets that you sent out from the beginning, what is the plan on how we use this and how we interact with you using the sheets?
Let's make sure that twice a year we are touching base. So at least every 6 months, I guess it would kind of depend on like, what are we working on? And you know, if there's something very specific, but for sure at a well visit, I want those gone through.
Okay.
And I think it will help. I mean, I think it will help both of us to remember to touch base and stay on track is the idea.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.